I'm Darius Larson. I'm teaching Bible here this week, but in the 80s I was the moderator of many of these panels, and so they asked me to do this today. And I'm a parent, and I've been on site councils and other sorts of things, so I have a passion and an interest for this topic, but I'm not what you call the expert here. And we'll have these two people introduce themselves, and then I'll lay out kind of the format of what we're going to be doing, and then they'll have some opening statements.
Good evening, I'm Stephanie Octocook, and I came up here to relax, actually, and find myself in the red hot spot here. I'm a wife and mom, I have three children. My oldest is 9, it's Marie, Eric is 7, and Sophie is 4. And the accent you hear is German. I'm German, but born and raised in Spain. And I went to a semi-private and public school. It was funded by one of the states in Germany. And it was a German school with Spanish as a second language. So I had a bifold, or twofold, let's say, cultural upbringing. The reason I ended here, I had hoped to introduce him, but my husband, I met my husband John at Hewlett Packard in Barcelona, where I was working as a secretary and buyer for some electronic plastic precision parts, and ended up marrying. And the name Octocook, if you wonder, is he's Alaskan. It's an Eskimo name. So our children are kind of an international mixture, but. Anyhow, so I'm currently a homemaker. When we got married, I transferred to our division in San Diego, and we moved about 4 years ago from California with our three children up here to Washington State. My hobbies are reading, traveling, history, and also soccer. I'm currently goalie on two indoor soccer teams. I'm in this red hot spot twice a week, so I guess I can get used to that. I also, I don't know why, but I somehow ended up taking over the PTA presidency at my children's school. It's an elementary school in Camas, Washington, and it's K through 4. So I wrote down here a few points that I want to mention, but it might get too long because he told us just no longer than.
Well, why don't you have an introduction, and then we'll come back.
I'm Jim Smith. I teach 7th grade at Centennial Middle School. Yeah, that's right. We have a new school this fall, so I have to get the name right. In Minnesota, Circle Pines, Lexington area. Living down the street from me is a guy named Ernie Carlson.
Oh, great.
My neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
My teaching staff up here for a couple of weeks doing stuff on the outdoors. And on education, and hopefully I'll be here until Saturday. We'll see after tonight.
For those of you who might not have been to a forum before, it's freewheeling, and if the group stays about this size, I might not have the hard reins as I normally have, but I ask you not to worry if you might offend somebody. That's okay. We want to speak our minds. We're not looking for conclusions here today. A good form is when I say it's 9:30, stop the tape, and last one out, shut off the lights. And if you keep talking, that's good. So with that further ado, after the continuing of the opening statements here, then I will just start it opening as a freewheeling discussion, maybe for some sort of order, raise your hand and I will point to you.
So. Just don't shoot us.
Yeah. Stephanie, were you going first?
I think you were.
Was I supposed to start?
Yes.
Okay. So, as I said, I'm here as a parent. My oldest children are in the public school system. Both my husband and I, we strongly believe in public education. Everybody should have a chance at a good quality education. And I guess we are in a small school district, but we are in a high-growth, booming area. The high-tech industry is settling down in a little mill town where the mill used to be, the Golden Goose. The mill is still in operation, but we have high-tech industry moving in. Hewlett-Packard is very close by. So there is a change in the whole makeup there in the residence, and we have a crisis going on right across the river in Portland, Oregon. So we have a lot of Oregonians moving over because our schools are still better funded, and that's getting us also into a crunch. So I just started following up in the newspapers of what was going on. I was starting to realize, hey, this is going to affect my children's education. I also enjoy working with children. Unfortunately, I never had a chance to study to become a teacher, but I still enjoy it. And so I got involved in the schools and started managing or just taking over some of the programs that the PTA was offering and also funding. And well, as I said, just ended up taking it over now, at least for a year. We both, my husband and I, we believe, but also my neighbors and the people that I deal with every day, we do believe in a good quality education, but we see that right now it's at a very, very fragile point. Just talking to the parents, listening to my friends and acquaintances, I hear positive and negative comments, and some of them I also see as, this is a concern, but we have to do something. Now, I'm also realizing that you can't cure all the ills of society, or whether it's society or some of the ills that are going on in the private school system or in our community, but you can at least try to start networking and maybe try to get something accomplished, whether it's getting people to vote when wherever we have a maintenance levy or school bonds that need to be approved, because we are at that point right now in Camas and in the county we are in, which is called Clark County. We follow what's going on in other school districts. The Vancouver School District has a very, very smart superintendent who does very good marketing. They haven't had any problem getting bonds through. So that's something that started bothering me a little bit. Whenever we had voting on bond issues, or even at state or federal level. So it was at times, it was one concern as a parent is what shocked me a little bit is voter apathy, and if you try talking to some parents about it, they're not really well informed or just overwhelmed by it. I found too, as I was getting involved in my children's school, as I was interacting with my children's classmates, that it is very crucial that we have parental involvement, that parents know what is going on in the schools. I think their children will also profit from it. One of our goals at our PTA for next year, together with staff, is to improve parental involvement. On the other hand, I'm a little bit concerned too that sometimes if parents get the overhand and then the teachers get brushed aside, or it's like, well, let's see what the parents like first and then we check with staff, that bothers me too, because personally I do trust the teachers as professionals, because they spend more time with my child during the day than I am sometimes, unless I spend a lot of time at the school. Some parents think I work at the school, which I don't. That's one concern, and at our school right now, that is one concern, that staff at times get brushed aside a little bit. Another big concern is the political climate, the funding issues. What scares me a lot too is the pounding that the public school system is getting from the Christian right. I see it, that's again my personal opinion, kind of the cubicle view is what's really scaring me off. We had some pretty, Washington, well, I guess you have some very independent people that politically it can get kind of extreme towards the right. and that is not always good.
Or the left.
Excuse me?
Or the left.
But Linda Smith comes from that part of the state, so there's a reason she's saying that.
But, and then also I try, being in an area where we have a lot of newcomers coming in, at least our school, we're starting with the upcoming school year, we're starting a newcomers club because we feel often the school, we also community makers because it's the first contact of the newcomers, where it's Oregon, we have a lot of Texans coming in, Californians. They blame all the other Californians, by the way, and then come the Oregonians. So we feel we are also, that's the first point, so you want to welcome them and also orient them a little bit, what's going on in our community, where they can go to the dry community, simple things. So that's one role that we see we can do as a school, too. So.
Jim?
Okay. When a business doesn't meet the needs of its clientele, the business folds and the customers go elsewhere. When a school fails to meet the needs of the clientele, namely the parents and the students, the consequence is an undereducated citizenry. But the school continues on, unchanged and untouched. Public schools aren't working for four reasons. Number one, performance. Number two, performance. Number three, performance. Number four, performance. Number one. Minnesota instituted a performance test in the eighth grade this year. In my school, about 60% of the students passed it in math. In my wife's school, 15%. It wasn't a very hard test, but the scores were big news in all the papers in Minnesota. And Minnesota tends to lead the nation in a lot of educational categories. The model of a factory school that we're still using is outdated. We don't work in factories anymore. We have a much more dynamic workplace, yet we're still teaching in a factory setting. Summers off are the part of a bygone agricultural system that really doesn't matter a whole lot anymore. It's a waste of resources and time. Check out your local crime rates in your communities and when they soar, summers. I can't believe I said that. number two, employers cannot find workers with critical thinking skills and creativity anymore. As a result, we are near the bottom in the industrial world in student achievement and falling behind in the global marketplace. Performance number three, teacher performance. The NEA and the MFT, whatever. The two teachers' unions have fought efforts to test teachers and is often seen as a roadblock in the path of educational reform. I personally am not paid by the performance in my classroom. I'm paid by the amount of college credits I have. Number four, performance. The poor. The poor in public schools perform poorly. Economic class is not one of the leading indicators of success in public school. It is the leading indicator in public schools. The best indicator of the success in public schools is the income of the parents. That's the thing that most closely correlates. Poor kids aren't making it. The result of this performance decline is number one. We don't have support in the political sector anymore. Arne Carlson's a classic example of that in Minnesota. He was the governor, he was endorsed by the teachers union last time around, and this time around he made teachers the enemy. Number two, there's no support from those who pay for the system. We have tax revolts all over the country in raising property taxes. Number three, the economic elite have fled the system and the middle class are following closely behind. And number four, despite Brown versus the Board of Education, we have segregated schools again. If you don't believe it, check out my school, which is about 20 miles from my wife's school. I have about 10 children of color in a school of 1,800. She's 30% black, 30% Asian, roughly a third black, African-American, third Asian, third white in her school. Totally different problems, 20 miles apart. To close this, I want to give you an example of my personal failure. I'm a social studies teacher. I teach citizenship and civics. In the last presidential election, approximately 50% of the people in the country voted. Okay, I see that as a personal failure. Perhaps it's time for a new model and a new system.
Okay. The floor is now open. Any comments and challenges or where we want to go? Yes.
I'd just like to add a couple additional points that you two didn't touch on. I agree with most of what you said, Stephanie and Jim. I spent 30 years as a professional educator. I've been a vice principal. I've been a guidance director twice. I've finished my last 26 years as a high school counselor. There are many, many frustrations. And I retired 8 years ago And I'm living now vicariously, doing my teaching now vicariously through my daughter, who has had 11 or 12 years of experience, and she is now a science department head in a junior high school in Minnesota. She's experiencing many of the same problems that I saw periodically through my career. And I bristled when I saw that title, "How Are the Public Schools Failing Children in Society?" Typically, when people address that problem, they're addressing teachers. Teachers are the problem. Let's get at them. They're easy to get to. They're right there on the firing line. Has anybody looked at the administrations? The poorest administrations that I have seen, and I've seen a lot of them, are those who look at the educational system as a hierarchy, a vertical hierarchy from the school board and superintendent at the top and the teacher somewhere down there and the janitor. The most successful administrators, those who are best to work for, work with, not for, with, are those who see a horizontal continuum of each person has a piece of the pie and we all work together. Many administrators have missed the point that people like me have chosen not to go, and a lot of teachers have chosen not to go into administration. Does that make us lower on the totem pole than that administrator who has the degree and chooses to go up? I think that's the weak link. And I'm just going to cut it short, but my vision is I think society should look more at the principal, but the administrators. And to go back to my daughter for a second, she is a crackerjack teacher. She's been a Sunday school teacher, a water safety instructor. I've watched her teach. She's a master teacher. Her administrators came to her not too long ago and almost asked her to reduce her standards. She maintains close contact with parents. She keeps those parents informed all the time. The kids who are willing to work are thriving. But those who don't want to work go whining home to mother. Mother calls the principal. Principal jumps on the teacher.
Yep.
And that is not good. And I see that there's many, many other ills here. But well, I think that's one of the big ones.
Let's get a few more people just to throw out what's stimulating in your mind now. And then we'll try to see if there's any sort of sense of order in any of it. One, two, three.
I walked in, unfortunately, just at the end of what you guys were talking about, but I heard Jim speak entirely to me. And I was listening to what you were saying, and I was looking at the triangle that says school, society, and children, and you talked about schools and children, but society is my gripe. Mm-hmm. And I come from a very, I imagine maybe you come from a more economically stable area than I do. Our gym fell down over Christmas vacation, luckily. Our second gym is condemned. Not because of a snow load, but because of cracks that were there before the snow came. My area does not put money into schools. They don't support the teachers, they don't support the administration, but bottom line, they don't want to put any money in at all. This is a rural area, economically depressed, but also the climate is very much each one for himself and herself. And that's very frustrating.
Before we go to two, I just want to say, we played around with, should we say, how is society failing children and the schools? And we put each of these in a different, and we thought this one might get the most anger going. And so we thought we would try that to get some people here.
All right, just a couple of things. First of all, I'd like to second what you're saying about parent participation. I'm from Canada, and we have a program called French Immersion, which is, until grade six, all my schooling was in French. And the parents who tended to put their kids in this program were the ones who really cared about their students' education. And this is especially visible with my graduation year because, especially in my school, there was the group of us from elementary school, about 20 of us or so, And we've gone from kindergarten right to grade 12 together. And our marks, it's about 6 or 7 out of the top 12 students in our school came from my elementary school, when there are at least 20 elementary schools feeding into our one high school. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is a little bit about performance tests. In our community, we have we're a fairly small community, 100,000 people. And it's not that big compared to Vancouver, which is 2 million people next to us. But we have about two schools comparable size, and they did a performance test in chemistry, and the other school ranked considerably higher than ours. But the fact of that school is they have, I think, one or two chemistry classes for the grade 12 chemistry students. Our school runs 6 to 8 chemistry classes for the year, so we have way more students in the program, thus our average mark is obviously going to be lower than the other one. And there's nothing we can do about that.
That's frustrating. And then we'll get back to you, Stephanie. Yes.
The first thing is, I really think your title is wrong.
That's okay.
I think you've got a double negative up there. Mm-hmm. I think it should say, or are they?
Or are they?
I think both halves of it say the same thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, we come from a district that thinks it's large, and because I've come from elsewhere, I don't think it is. But it is very resistant to change, and when you spoke about administration, I have a regular ed kid and a high maintenance special needs kid. And our big victory last year in the special ed parents group was that we actually got the district to allow us to print a form to pass out to new parents coming into the district, kind of a hierarchy of where you go if you have a special needs kid, and a form that they could fill out that would say, you know, my child's teacher is, the principal is, the secretary is, the people that a parent would need to contact, you know, if they're speech language or OT or whatever it is, those kinds of teachers, and then actually list by name the people in the special ed department at the district office. They didn't want to be known. It took me 4 years to find out who they were, and I was pretty persistent about it. And they actually let the school board members be named on a sheet that was convenient, not where you'd have to search through the paper, you know, through board meeting minutes and that kind of thing. I think that kind of school is doomed to fail, and I know that it has been very difficult for us with a special needs child. Our daughter is doing fine. She's in a wonderful school. But when society at large is closing down big public programs to help kids, group homes, and our son is not the kind that would be institutionalized, but institutions are closing, when the idea is that society will take care of its own, the community solution kind of thing, and yet you have to fight to get any kind of education, and it really truly falls back on the parents. That's a real tough situation. That's a no-win situation for any of them. For the school, mm-hmm. who's being drained of resources by this continual fighting and lawsuit thing. For society, who's getting these people dumped on them untrained and, you know, at large, unemployed, and the children who aren't living up to their best, highest use.
You wanted to make
I have to admit, and I agree, I cringed when they suggested to, when this was suggested, I said, you know, the way I would word it is, how is society failing public schools and the children? And as a parent, and again, as I spent quite some time at the school, maybe I'm just lucky, I'm happily married, we're trying to give our kids as much as we can. I personally feel that as a parent, we also have a role in challenging our kids and providing enriching opportunities. Now, there is the other concern that I hear a lot from parents is like, the standards are not high enough. We need to challenge the kids a little bit more. And then on the other hand, I'm helping out in the Title I program, and I see the children that are performing below average. And usually there's quite some baggage behind those. I mean, those kids have, some of these kids have gone through situations that I haven't even gone through, and I'm 38 now, which are really tough. So I see the funding that's being put to get those kids up to average. And then I see when they're back in the classroom again, and the teacher is trying to teach these kids, but then you have an inclusion. That's the other problem. You have to, some parents see it as a problem, that the teacher cannot teach our children because she's continuously being disrupted by, well, in some classrooms, one classroom had up to 10 difficult children. And a lot of parents get very frustrated about it and say, what can we do about it, Stephanie? What can PTA do? Well,
yes.
I think it's difficult for the PTA to do anything because they don't, in my school district, the Shoreline School District outside Seattle, the PTA is essentially a cheerleading section for the teachers. It really is a means of deflecting parents into a program where they will be least influential in shaping what goes on in the school district. And it creates a lot of trouble because that's just the way our district is. Going to the question there, I think, for me, it's a fairly easy question to analyze. How are the public schools failing children in society? From my perspective, they're failing children in society by not providing for the children and for the society that which the children in the society would like to see provided by the schools. And as an economist, not professionally, but by undergraduate degree, it seems to me that that tends to be the nature of most monopolistic enterprises. They really are not attuned to what their operation is. They're simply attuned to enhancing their own status, enhancing their own, just growing for the sake of growth, rather than for meeting the needs of the people who are consuming the service. And it's especially frustrating when you have to spend many thousands of dollars to provide your children with an education that you think is acceptable, while at the same time you're paying a lot of tax dollars that are being, what I would describe as being frittered away.
I might just add, we'll call on you, if there's anything you want to change, if how are the public schools succeeding? Some people may want to change it that way and make some positive statements as well. I'd like to hear those too. Yes?
I just wanted to say a word about parent involvement. I tried that in our local school, a small school district.
Done that.
Basically, what we were asked to do is raise money for the teachers to buy candy to reward the kids with. My kids came home with more candy than I could ever imagine was possible. They got candy for everything. And that's what was going on in our classrooms. I wanted to do something to help enrich the gifted kids program. They wanted nothing of that. They really didn't. They wanted me to make money so they could give the kids candy for filling out a worksheet. I gave up. I didn't participate.
So for some of you, actually, PTA is kind of a negative thing to do?
There's no PTA. You have to go in and individually. In our school district, just go in and find
I guess it depends on the school district or on the school.
Yeah, and you weren't saying negative, you were just saying worthless.
That's not...
I may have given that impression,
and I don't mean to. I think it can serve a valuable function, and it does serve a somewhat valuable function, but it tends to deflect parental involvement away from shaping what's going on with the curriculum or in general what the children are learning, and it deflects the parents from
that. Now, I got the impression that your kids are going to private school.
Yes.
Okay. So you're not involved in the PTA in the public school. So you really, do you personally?
You mean after 10 years I became discouraged? Yes, that's true.
Okay. So were you involved in the PTA personally?
I was involved in the PTA on a limited basis. We were members. We attended the meetings where perhaps 10 people go, and I probably hit 4 or 5 of those meetings.
Okay. Well, I can't speak for your school district and your personal PTA and your personal experiences, but I know that in our school, and I'm speaking as a teacher, but I'm also a parent, I think certainly PTA does serve the function of raising money for the schools. That is one thing that has been, we've really appreciated. We have to submit what it is we're using the money for, so they have a real good idea of where we're spending our money. And a lot of the money that's spent is our own personal money too, okay? But I see the PTA as a real positive in our school, because and parents are more and more and more getting involved in decision making that affects policy and things that are happening in our school. Technology, they have played a real major role. And I'm on the technology committee in my building, and we have parents on that committee, and they're involved in making decisions about the money that we've been raising and how we're going to spend it.
Now that's the money that's raised through the PTA?
Not solely through the PTA, because we have other funding, but they're involved in the whole process of it, and they're helping make policy, and they're very involved in decision making. And
then there may be some hope for your school.
We meet not just after school, because there's some parents that can't come then. So there, we've compromised with meeting after school one time, and then in the evenings another time, so that to make sure that we can get the parents there. And that's just one example, I think, that shows parents are very involved in our schools, and not just raising money for, you know, whatever purposes, and not just cheerleading for the teachers, and not just there, you know, to deflect. They're really getting involved in things that make a difference in how the direction of our school.
Stephanie is in 2 and then 3.
Yeah, I just want to mention, I mean, at least at our school, Dorothy Fox School in the Campbell School District, we have one fundraiser a year, and we make sure, and we keep emphasizing, this is not our main role, it's just to come up with money and raise money. We gave the school $2,000 to buy, no, $1,000 to buy reading materials. A lot of parents are in the health room. They're in the doing the lice checks. And boy, some of these moms are becoming real experts. It's not very pleasant. I have to say too. I mean, we're probably lucky. Hewlett-Packard is in the community. We are a Hewlett-Packard family, but they have a community involvement program for K through 12th grade, and they're even giving 4 hours. Is it a year? 4 hours a year on company time that employees. A lot of them are parents. A lot of parents at my school are Hewlett-Packard parents, and. So they can go out on company time teaching at the schools. Hewlett-Packard is making grants available. We are trying now to go through that maze and try to find out which grant, how can we get to it, so that we can invest it in the school. And in a way, Hewlett-Packard is looking. I mean, they're trying to raise the standards too, because and they will provide employment opportunities. Right there for the local kids. They won't have to go to Texas or other universities where they're going now to draw from their pool. So this is just one example. So I'm sitting on. I mean, I now that I'm PTA representative, I also other moms, other parents, not just moms. I mean, they're being drawn into school district decisions, so I don't see us just raising money for candy.
But I see that as a deflection from...
From what?
Well, how much per student is being spent by the school district on education? Perhaps $5,000 per student? So when you talk about $1,000 for an entire school, I think, to me, that's infinitesimal, and it's shifting parents' focus from where it should be, namely on how money is being wasted by the public schools in bucketfuls, by supporting, I don't know, what does it go for administration, 30 or 40% as compared to the number of dollars that are actually getting to the teachers in the classroom and supporting the buildings? It's outrageous.
Certainly my wife and I took education very seriously. In fact, it was our primary factor for leaving the state of Kansas, and I hope nobody's from there, but without Kansas, to move to Minnesota, because Minnesota was ranked very high in education, plus it's close to family and all that. And we've been very pleased in general. However, we have been discussing perhaps putting our kids in private schools for a few issues. Probably the main one that I have, and being more conservative than my wife, is the fact of mainstreaming, and I think that can be disruptive in the classroom. My thoughts are with mainstreaming, and I don't have the overall answer for how that can be addressed, but with mainstreaming, I think it disrupts the classroom to the point that you're at times lowering standards of the classroom instead of raising maybe some of the mediocre classmates, raise them up. And so I would like to see, and I don't throw out the teachers, I think legislation has done a lot of this to society. So once again, it's a tough issue for us. I'm pleased with Minnesota education in general, but there are still some concerns that need to be addressed, but outside the hands of the teachers.
There, here, and then there, and then?
I always want to react in the classroom. If the parents have, you know, that school, they're wasting money, they're doing this, they're doing that. The child goes into the classroom and, well, you know, they're just wasting my parents' tax dollar, and I, you know, should be doing this and this and this. And it has a very negative effect on a student's learning. I come from the state of Montana, where homeschooling has become extremely popular. Parents who aren't even high school graduates have the right to teach their children at home. There is no testing, nothing. You know, how are they failing? Kids in our future.
Not as the moderator here, but a comment, probably more as the Bible study teacher, because it's so much of a part of the Genesis story when we're talking about Adam and Eve and passing blame around all the time. Who made me do it? Who made me do it? Who made me do it? That somehow what gripes me whenever I get into conversations about education, we can always point the finger all over the place, and we spend so much energy pointing fingers and blaming versus taking responsibility. And that's not an easy answer, but I would like to see, you know, who's going to say, I'm responsible for this. I have seen many teachers say that. Over here, and then we'll do the 1, 2, 3 over here.
I'll stand up since I'm hiding. Something that's apparent from listening to everyone is everyone's perception of the school system is different. It's because we all live in different areas. We've got different social backgrounds, different economic backgrounds, and so there's a large diversity of experiences. Something that, in my opinion, would allow the school system to cut through that diversity that exists out among different communities is an expectation that doesn't exist right now. And that's an expectation for a minimum level of performance with recognition for achievement. And that would be something like a national test of sort, administered at perhaps a secondary level with entries on graduation. When you see something like a diploma nowadays, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Depends on the school system you come from. Like you just commented earlier, someone that doesn't even have a high school education is trying to teach the kids, maybe they'll do a good job. You don't know if they are. The diploma is pretty much worthless in a lot of cases. We experience that hiring people in large numbers on the production floor. The diploma, for the most part, means they don't know math, they don't know science, they can't, for the most part, be expected to do what you would think someone coming out of 12 years of education would be able to accomplish. Simple things. Counters at supermarkets. You have to have icons down on there because they can't have the track on all pieces. Anyway.
Hi.
Is it your turn? Okay.
I'm a
senior in high school right now. I started at public school and changed to a private school in high school. And I started in a kindergarten class of 50 students. And even at that point, we broke up, I think, into groups of three, sort of a tracking system, I think, for reading and counting and things like that. And in first grade, I tested out and went into a highly capable program, which was a split level, two grades in one classroom, about 25 people in a room. And I thought that that was a very good experience. We were working a grade level ahead, at least in math, I know. And I was pleased, and that went through sixth grade. But then in seventh and eighth grade, we went to the main school, all the elementary schools, fed into a middle school of 800 students. And at that point, there were honors programs for English and math, and the rest was just mixed up with everybody. And the quality really dropped off, because even in the math and English, which were honors, since we had been working at a grade level ahead, everything was review, and I ended up being, you know, it was just not challenging at all. And I ended up studying, between the summer of seventh and eighth grade, I studied math on my own at home. And I tested out of eighth grade math at the beginning of my eighth grade year, so I took math at the high school that year. And that was an honors class for ninth grade students, and there were also 10th, 11th, and 12th graders in that class. And I think I was probably one of the top scholars in the class, just but grade-wise. And the motivation of the students was just, I don't know, the teacher taught about 10 minutes. The opening 10 minutes were for copying homework from other people, and the rest of the time was doing the homework for that night that the teacher had just assigned. And usually I just left class, you know, 20 minutes early, because I was trying to get back to my middle school on time for my child care class to begin. I didn't want to miss too much of that. So I ended up just like seeing those students, and this was supposed to be the honors class. It was just not looking like the high school was going to be providing me much of anything. And so I switched over to private. And I think the main difference in the private school, besides the smaller classes, they try to keep the top limit at about 17 students per class. But I've had as few as 12 in my honors physics and things like that. And I think the main difference, and what I can perceive from the classroom situation, is that the teachers expect a lot more out of every student. I'm toward the top of the class, and I feel that the classes are all really hard for me. I mean, I spend hours at night doing my homework, and I feel like there are still students who aren't motivated or look as if they're goofing around, but the academic rigor is there just because the teachers are constantly pushing you. Every night there's, you know, a lot to do. And my public school friends who continued on in their honors programs, the ones that are known as being really hard are the ones that give homework every day. So it's just, I don't know, I've been pleased with my education, except the seventh and eighth grade years, it was just so much different that
but
it was hard.
I guess you're probably fortunate that your parents were able to provide you with a private school education, but a lot of kids, they just can't. For us, it would be very hard to provide private education for three children. Our youngest is four now, so eventually she'll be in school too. And that's why I feel we have to do, you can't just let it slip out, we have to do something about it. And I see that in my school district, some parents are pushing quite a bit. They're pushing the administration for that, and you need to do something, and just brush them off, because at some point my children will be out there too, and I don't want them to get shocked by them. So I want my children's classmates also to have, or children in the community also to have a quality education. So there has to be a way where we something can be done.
Somebody once said that public education is everybody's vested interest. I want to get to you, but have a comment, but if you want to get brief.
No, I want to respond to what you, okay. One thing that ties into what I said originally.
Okay.
You said you were in eighth grade, and you were put into a ninth grade honors program for your math. But there were also 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. That's an administrative blunder. That should have been only the honors ninth grade, and that's what I was talking about before. It's not the teacher. The teacher was probably tops, trying her darndest or his darndest. But the administration blundered on that one. No way do you put unmotivated 10th, 11th, and 12th grade students in an honors ninth grade math.
I just, two things I wanted to comment.
Go for it.
One was, I really, having a wife as a teacher, one of the things that I have really seen is a lot of defensiveness on her part and on the part of a lot of teachers. I mean, this title brought it up tonight. Mm-hmm. And I've wondered about that. Where does that defensiveness come from? And I think there is an undermining of teachers that we have in our society. One of the things I think that has contributed to that, and Jim alluded to it a little bit, is I think that the teachers' unions really are very suspect in our, in general, amongst people. I think people look at the unions as being a place where bad teachers continue to thrive.
Yep.
And there's that perception out there. And I think, whereas teachers' unions have generally tried to help teachers, that's an instance where they've undermined the teachers. The other thing I wanted to comment real quickly is Jim mentioned the performance tests that have been in Minnesota. Just to clarify what's been done with those is these are performance tests that are geared for seniors in high school that they're giving to eighth graders. And those, 50% of the eighth graders are passing those, some districts even much more. By the time they get to 12th grade, they're hoping that 96% of those will pass. But I think my point here is that the media has grabbed onto this issue. And in the St. Paul paper, there's a comparison of district by district, public and private schools. And there's a perception out there that all kids are supposed to be passing this test. Well, they're eighth graders. It's a senior's test. How can they possibly be passing it? So there's a very big misconception amongst the public about what these tests are all about. And I think it's that also is undermining a lot of the public school confidence.
That's administration, too.
Okay. Did you have a comment that will go over here?
I think she's responding to him.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Sure, good.
Yeah, and to you, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. You were talking about finger pointing. And somebody else was talking about finger pointing. I think that we could use my school district as an example of where all that finger pointing goes. I made a mistake when I spoke earlier because, yes, our area is economically depressed, but there are a lot of wealthy people who live there. And all this finger pointing in our society, in our little school district has got us to hitting a brick wall, where people are espousing the property rights issue so strongly because of the mistrust of the school board, of the tests, of the homeschool, of the gambit, that they refuse to put money into the system so far that they're thinking of closing, as a solution, closing one of our three elementary schools. Finally, the people are saying, oh, I guess we've hit a brick wall. I guess we finally need to add some money to the pot. But that's where it goes. I mean, you can talk about all these issues, you know, who's doing this right and who's doing this wrong, and all it does is bring mistrust. And I don't know a good solution to that, because whenever you work with lots of people, you're going to have, you know, conflict.
Suspicion is rampant.
But that's where it hits.
Yep.
I have been in Vancouver School District for 30 years. And
Clark County?
Vancouver in
Clark County. Well,
Clark County.
Okay. Good school district.
I teach in a low-income area there. Mm-hmm. And actually, the last 5 or 6, 8 years have been the most wonderful years teaching-wise. I know I'm in the right state. I know I'm in the right district. in a lot of those kind of things. But a lot of things have happened that have helped the community, I think. We've gotten a lot of businesses that have helped us. She talked about Hewitt Packard. We have a guy by the name of Paul Christensen who has many bucks. I don't know, probably some other Vancouver people know more what he really runs, but he has taken our school under his wing. He has given us a full-time volunteer coordinator, which has been the most valuable resource ever. She helps with those parents that want to come in and help us. Sometimes you get good parents, but you don't know that you're going to get good parents. You can get the parent that has stinky arms all the time, and kids can't stand sitting next to them. And so when you get in the middle of those kind of things with a parent, it's very dangerous. This parent volunteer teaches those volunteers how to be volunteers, how to dress, some of the things that we say are important. She does all the scheduling for them. She goes out and she goes to Clark College, picks up volunteers, brings them back to us. I just can't say enough about that position. So if you are involved and want to get involved, that would be a position I would go after in your local school.
Yeah, I want to mention too, the Vancouver School District has a very strong, it's an arts management school, as well as for a great program for high achievers as well. And plus they got a National Architectural Award with the new schools they've been building. They look nice, they fit in the community, and it's really positive. We might have to move to Vancouver.
Well, just the thing about the building, though. Like, as long as the building's safe, I don't really think it matters really what it looks like. I
Oh, yes, it does.
My school is a cinder block, 20-year-old cinder block building. But we don't really care what this looks like. We like being there. We like our teachers. And the building is just sort of there. It's what we use. We don't really care about the building.
But you can usually tell the way school looks how the community cares.
Yes, but not how
the
teachers are necessarily.
I mean, this is just one factor, okay? It's not crucial, but it's the details sometimes add up again.
Well, someone mentioned attitude, you know, and your pride in your schools. That makes a big difference. And sometimes the building plays a part in that. You know, what you see inside the building going on, of course, makes a big, that's ultimately it. Because there's a lot of other things that
We have a lot of educators in this room, and I also understand that this title bothered some people, and I also know that there are teachers, at least that I'm related to, are dedicated, hardworking teachers. I heard by your opening statement that may not be all teachers. What do we do with all that? Can we somehow, do we have to mainstream teachers?
Well, there's the
just, okay.
The public school is much more than teachers. Mm-hmm. I mean, obvious, but you know, I've been impressed for the most part. I'm her husband, and so I know the ones who hand out candy and have that frustration, but for the most part, the teachers are well-educated, they care, they do their job well, they're up to date on current techniques and things, and they're doing creative, wonderful stuff. And when I go in for parent-teacher conferences, I am more often than not impressed by how well the teacher knows my child, what's going on. That's part of the system. But, so, you know, the teachers in public schools aren't synonymous with me, yet I'm very frustrated with the school system because there's lots of other stuff going on which is hamstringing the teachers from doing the job they're capable
which
of
is back, doing. Which is back to your point.
I came in late, so I missed I mean, they're serving breakfast as well as lunch in our school now, mm-hmm. and kids are pulled out of kindergarten, first and second grade for the first half hour to have breakfast and then brought in they miss class, it disrupts the rest of the class when they come in and out. They tend to just tread water until those kids come back. Those are social problems which are being forced upon the schools mm-hmm. to deal with. not to mention, you know, DARE and all these other, you know, gang-related programs, all these things that my kids are being taught about in school, that teachers, what they say to me is, we have to do this, and there's value in it, but if I'm doing that, I can't do this.
But now, the reality, if I heard what you're saying, if you want to elaborate on it, the number one success factor in public education is the economic...
How much money do the folks make?
Yeah, how much money do the folks make? So
what folks?
Your parents.
Parents. Yeah. My kids would do okay because I have an okay salary. Somebody else's kids would do real good because they have real good salaries. Would that be the case? But really the case, some people who are unemployed or hardly have any money will probably not do well at all. That's what you're saying. Okay. You wanted to comment, then back to your family.
One thing, Oregon just did away with tenure. And that's one thing that is going to, teachers are now on, is it 2-year or 3-year contracts that'll be renewable. That's one way, and the teachers union supported that. So I think maybe some of the suspicion in Oregon about the teachers union will dissipate, because now teachers, you know, will have to re-up. And if there is not a reason to sign them on again, they won't be re-signed. There was another crucial point I was going to make. Oh, about parent volunteers. You know, they are crucial. And I think the training is great and it makes a huge difference. But I think that with the mainstreaming issue, because I'm in the middle of that, I don't think mainstreaming is always the best way. But it's what somebody has designed as the best thing, and it seems to be pretty much, you know, pretty much. And for many kids, it is a good way. I believe that. And for some, it's not appropriate. But I think society is failing the schools by not giving the teachers in the classroom. Most of those teachers studied to be teachers. That's what I studied to be for. I didn't study to be a special education teacher. As a parent, I've had to do a whole lot of studying to catch up on what it was I never learned. That most of those teachers didn't either. We're not giving them the resources that they need to handle the kids that are being forced into their classroom, whether it's the best idea or not. And I think that's something that society has to decide. You know, how are we going to treat the special needs kids, whether it's a simple problem or a big problem, or, you know, are we going to put ramps in for wheelchairs or aides with autistic children, or, you know, whatever it is. The teachers, in order to function, have to have the support they need. And some of that can come from parents. I mean, I tutor phonics because I can do that. There are lots of parents who couldn't do that. But they also have to have the paid specialists to back up and give advice or come into the classroom to work or whatever.